most important topics and the most influential voices. Leaders is a forum where industry experts and innovators share their experiences and perspectives on business-critical issues. This is content that drives decision-making. Join the conversation today at thebondbuyer.com/leaders.
Hi, and welcome to another Bond Buyer podcast. I'm Chip Barnett. My guest today is John Hallisey, and he's the founder of John Hallisey Consulting, LLC. Today, we're going to be talking about a wide range of subjects that are important to the public finance sector. Welcome, John.
Hey, Chip. Good to connect with you today.
First, why don't we talk a little bit about the lingering credit impacts of this pandemic? Do you think there are risks that remain, you know, taking into account all of the federal financial aid that's flowing in now?
Well, you know, going into this, of course, the greatest concern was going to be budget gaps and insufficiencies and tax collections that would have come in below, well below estimate. And obviously, a lot of that has not come to pass, in part because the economy's picked up due to the higher vaccination rate, and of course, due to the federal aid. Now, the one item that I'm always concerned about in an environment like this, when you have the federal largesse, is do you start to lose discipline and not look at the parts of your budget where maybe you should make adjustments? And it kind of delays the day of reckoning, so to speak. I think we're not going to know how well this cycle will be managed till we get out to 2022-23, that is fiscal years. And, you know, for the most part, this year will be fairly well managed because of the federal flow. So I think that's one of the dangers here, but certainly the biggest dangers of revenue shortfalls have pretty much been addressed at this point.
You know, spreads are kind of trending towards the tighter side right now. Some, you know, heavy supply may reverse it, but do you see this trend persisting?
Well, it certainly seems like the low rates and low spreads and very low ratios are here to stay for some time. I mean, we just had a CPI reading at 5%. And of course, it came in on the high side because of the low base from last year. But at the same time, we had the 10-year Treasury bottoming at 145. And I think net-net, people are becoming more comfortable that the Fed is going to hold a steady course till indicators dramatically change. So I think that's part of what's keeping rates down. And I'm also amazed that in muni land, the positive flows continue to take place into the mutual funds. And it's really been an underpinning of support for the market. So the answer is, I don't see it changing anytime soon. But as we know, this market is always susceptible to turning rapidly when events and indicators change.
You know, this trend towards taxable municipals has been persisting for a while now. Is there anything on the horizon to change this issuance, do you think?
As of the moment, it's mainly been, you know, a rate play. I was at an industry event, believe it or not, an industry event the other day, where I was talking to some of my colleagues, and some of them who were involved on the retail side are saying that in individual accounts, taxable municipals now are as much as 15 to 20% or more. And they're making the case that it's primarily due to the fact that they want a little bit of a higher cash flow and get a little better return out of the taxables. So I don't think the taxable trend is going to change anytime soon, but some of that depends on ultimately on what's going to happen with tax policy at the federal level. Are we going to have an increase in the personal income tax, top rate back to 39.6 and what have you? So that remains to be seen. We might not know that till, you know, late in the fall.
Looking at the federal side, there's been some talk about bringing back the BABS program at a lower subsidy. Do you think this is going to happen?
I'm certainly seeing a lot more talk about that. And it was a very popular program. And it is a way to stoke the pace of getting some infrastructure done in a relatively quick fashion. So I think it's entirely possible. And I do agree that it would be at the lower subsidy. Nobody knows exactly what that would be, but there was a lot of talk about 25%. But the other aspect of it was to make sure it's not subject to sequestration as the previous program had been. And that actually kept some of the potential participants from getting involved because there was a fear that the federal payment would be cut back, which actually did happen. So I think that would also have to be a feature of any new program there.
And we'll be right back after these messages.
Get analysis and insights to fuel your decision-making with a subscription to The Bond Buyer, the industry's most essential resource. Unmatched coverage of the municipal finance world, original research and industry rankings, access to thought leaders. Gain a professional advantage by subscribing today at bondbuyer.com/subscribe.
And we're back with John Hallisey. You know, infrastructure is a top headline that we're seeing every day. Do you think a plan is really going to come about? The need is there, but is the will there?
Well, that's a great question, Chip. I mean, I think the first iteration has fallen apart, and now we're looking at this bipartisan effort on the Senate side of 10 senators. And that package is approximately $1 trillion over 8 years, give or take a little bit in either direction. And I know that there was some talk about possibly indexing the gas tax because it hasn't been raised since the early 90s. And that would be one way to keep up rather than just having ad hoc increases from time to time. And as you know, everybody wants a package, but nobody wants to raise taxes to pay for it. And, you know, the question becomes just how practical is that? But indexing would be certainly one approach to the challenge. And of course, there's always user fees. But apparently the administration is pretty opposed to taking actions that would affect workers who make less than the 400,000 mark. So it still remains to be seen, but I think there is true willingness to try to get something accomplished here on a narrower definition of what infrastructure is.
You know, right now, all eyes are on inflation and the potential impact on the Federal Reserve. How do you think municipals would react to a sudden change in course by the FOMC? You know, bond purchases may end first. Would this cheapen the market and would higher rates be beneficial?
Yeah, there's a lot of different thoughts in that question. In terms of inflation, you know, we're definitely trending higher now with the 5% read as of yesterday. And although it's affected by the base from last year, it's certainly trending over 2%. So I think there's an acknowledgement there that the economy is going to run hot for some time, and that will lead to inflation. Now, how the Fed reads that is the big question. And they've kind of been on record saying that they would cut back on the $120 billion of monthly purchases before they would consider anything on the rate side in terms of increasing rates. So I think we need to keep an eye on that. I think there's a little bit more of general discussion that it may be time to stop purchasing MBS and treasuries and ease up on that a bit. It won't be quite like the taper tantrum we had back in 2013, if they can ease into it a little bit more. You know, I think there is a chance that if that happens, the market should be expected to cheapen up a bit, you know, because levels can't really get pushed too much lower from where they are. So I think that would be the effect when Treasury Secretary Yellen says higher rates would be beneficial. I mean, certainly for savers and investors, they would be somewhat beneficial. But as we know, it always cuts both ways. So we'd have to sift through exactly how much different they would be.
You know, one item of debate has been workers returning to the office. How important do you think it is for some sort of resumption in attendance at the old shop?
Well, it's a great question, and it's a very important question for any central city with a significant central business district. I think that there's a lot of expectation that there will be more attendance, at least by September. But there's also an acknowledgement that more flexibility will be built into the system. But, you know, clearly it's a factor in keeping offices occupied and keeping corporations and employers from, you know, unloading some of their real estate and maybe consolidating certain of their departments. And, you know, from a real estate property tax standpoint, that's a pretty important factor. So I think there's a lot of consensus that it would be a good thing for cities to have people back in the office, but there's also this acknowledgement that flexibility has to be part of the package.
You know, looking at taxes, according to the administration's plans, the federal taxes are poised to increase. What increases do you think are likely to succeed, and will demand for municipals be affected by this?
You know, Chip, I think that the personal income taxes stand a better chance to be increased back to the 39.6 level on the top bracket. I also think that it makes sense that there might be some increase in the corporate income tax from the 21 level back to maybe 25. I think most people agree that 28 might be a bit too high. So there might be some compromise there. Where I find it really difficult to find a way to see it being implemented is on the capital gains tax for high earners. I mean, our system is really driven by people investing in the market and therefore participating in cap gains. And having a cap gains rate that's as high or even higher than the top personal income tax rate just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I mean, you want risk-taking in the economy because ultimately that should lead to higher employment levels. So that's the one I think that is least likely. Call me out on that if you disagree, but that's my current thought.
John, do you have any last thoughts for our listeners today?
You know, Chip, one thing I have to say is disclosure over time has really improved. Being a reformed analyst, I know that most analysts always want to see more disclosure, better disclosure, more timely disclosure. But over the years, it has really improved significantly. I think right now, a lot of issuers are grappling with how do you disclose the climate change factors? Not an easy topic to do in succinct fashion. It probably can't be handled in more in a paragraph or two. It might have to be lengthier than that. And I know a lot of standards are being discussed in the industry. NFMA is certainly always interested in the outcome on any disclosure topic. So I think there might be some more, you know, probing on that end. But overall, disclosure has improved over the long haul. Also, ESG clearly is front and center. A lot of people are considering the implications. It's been very pronounced in the global markets. It's becoming more of a factor in our market, but I kind of see it as a demand pull. If the buyers want it and they want to create more ESG-focused mutual funds or ETFs, I think we're going to see a lot more of ESG origination than what has even occurred to date. So I think that trend is here to stay, but the question is how fast does it build? Really depends on the demand from the buy side.
John, thank you very much for being here today.
It's my pleasure, Chip.
And thanks for listening to this Bond Buyer podcast. Thanks to Justin Rodriguez, who did the audio production for this episode. And special thanks again to my guest, John Hallisey of John Hallisey Consulting, LLC. And don't forget to rate us, review us, and subscribe at www.bondbuyer.com/subscribe. For The Bond Buyer, I'm Chip Bornett, and thank you for listening.